from Portland, Oregon. This is the Jewish Review Podcast. I'm Rock Me Roll. Coming up this episode, Mark Blattner, the CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, recently reached 30 years of service in Jewish federations in the U.S., holding leadership positions in Baltimore, Atlanta, Philadelphia, and for the last 14 years, here in Portland. In honor of this achievement, I sat down with Mark to talk about his career, the places he's worked, and about the future of Jewish communal life in North America. We also get into the secret of a proper deli sandwich and a lot more. Stay with us. The Jewish Review Podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. It's not too late to contribute to the Federation's 2024 Campaign for Community Needs and support all the things that make Portland's Jewish community really a community, including this podcast. Contribute before June 30th online at jewishportland.org/give. Now, let's hear from the boss, Federation CEO Mark Blattner. Mark Blattner, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you, Rockney. It's happy to be here.
And it's happy to have you here. So tell me about your Jewish journey.
So I'm originally from Orlando, Florida. My father owned the only Jewish deli in town. So I knew a lot of people in the Jewish community itself, just based on the deli. And I used to work there as a kid, starting when I was 8 years old, helping to clear tables, do whatever it was. My parents were both involved in the synagogue in town. And so grew up actively engaged in Jewish life, very involved in BBYO, AZA. And eventually, at the end of my senior year of high school, I was elected the international president of AZA. That's really what put me on this trajectory to go into Jewish communal life. So when I graduated high school, I was all set to go to New York University on their five-year MBA program. This was 1987, Wall Street, greed is good, etc. And that year, when I got elected, I took a year off between high school and college, and I had the opportunity to travel all over the world for BBYO. It was in December of 1987 when I was in New York. I first visited my sister at Columbia University. She was a freshman there. And then I had the opportunity to go and walk around the village and see NYU. And I'm like, what is a nice Jewish boy from Orlando, Florida going to do in New York? And then the next day I got on a train to go to Washington, D.C. for what was then the largest rally in American Jewish history to get the release of Soviet Jews. Mikhail Gorbachev was coming to America to meet with President Reagan, and literally walking down the street with thousands of people I did not know to go to this rally, I said to myself, I want to work for the Jewish people. So I contacted my parents, and back then it was expensive to call home, and I said, I don't want to go to NYU, I want to work for the Jewish people. And my father's response was, do you want to be a rabbi? And I said, no, I don't want to be a rabbi. He goes, okay. And my mother then went into mother panic mode of, what are you going to do about applying for college? So it seemed different then than it does today. And I was able to apply to college. And I went to college in Atlanta at Emory University and studied both Jewish studies and Middle Eastern history. And then I eventually got my graduate school degrees in Baltimore and what was then known as the Baltimore Institute for Jewish Communal Service. It was a combined program, a master's in social work, along with a master's in Judaic studies. And that's where it all came from, and never looked back since.
And where did that path take you?
I worked in Baltimore at the Jewish Federation called the Associated for 1 year as an intern, and then the next 10 years on their staff. I was eventually their campaign director, raising $30 million a year for the community. After that, I went to Atlanta. I was the chief operating officer of the Jewish Federation of Greater Atlanta for almost 5 years. And then I went to Philadelphia, where I had a big, long, fancy title. It's too long to mention on this podcast, where I was basically the number two person at the Federation. I was there for several years. And then an opportunity came up to come out here to Portland. Never lived on the West Coast. Been to Portland in 1987 when I was the international president of BBYO. It was the first city I had visited when I started my travels. And I remember at the very end of the year, my two favorite cities that I had visited, one was Portland, Oregon, and the other one was Dublin, Ireland. Both very green, very lush trees, etc. And the opportunity came about, and the next thing I know, I'm here in Portland, Oregon for the past 14 years.
And we've been very happy to have you. So there are lots of different ways to serve the Jewish people, as your dad pointed out. He asked if you were going to be a rabbi. What is it about the Jewish Federation system that brought you into this space where you've worked for these 30 years, and what's kept you here?
So I appreciate that question. So when I went to graduate school, my dream was to become the executive director for BBYO. I love BBYO, I love my experiences in the organization, et cetera. And I thought maybe that would be my path. When I started graduate school, there was five people in my program for my year. And on the first day of the program, we had a meeting at the Jewish Federation of Baltimore with the five of us to meet with the then CEO of the Federation named Daryl Friedman. And at that meeting, I was the only one who came on time. Everybody else was late. And so he and I had the opportunity to start chatting. Well, he was very involved in BBYO, was a regional president in San Francisco, my connections in BBYO, and we hit it off right away. And the next thing you know, he really becomes like a mentor to me while I'm in grad school. So my first year of grad school in the School of Social Work, I was at Jewish Family and Child Service as an intern. But the second year, I could be at the Jewish Federation. And it was really that chance interaction with Daryl, that extra 5-7 minute conversation that got me inspired about Federation work. Now, I should take a step back. I did know about Jewish Federation because when I grew up in Orlando, Paul Jesser, for those of you who remember Michael Jesser of blessed memory, his father was the director of the Federation in Orlando when I grew up. And he and my dad were friends, and I used to hear about the Federation all the time. So I knew something about Federation, but it was never really intimately involved. But it was through Daryl that suddenly the spark came about me, and I just loved the opportunity to serve a community, not a specific target audience, not a specific geographic area, not a certain population group, but literally the community as a whole. And I think that's been my practice ever since, is my focus on community.
How have you seen Jewish federations change in the years that you've been working in these organizations?
So I think there's a lot of change that's going on. So number one is, back in the day, the Federation was really the central address of the Jewish community, the fundraising, the planning, et cetera. What's happened over time is organizations in the community have gotten larger. So instead of having that central single fundraising place, the other organizations started to raise their own money as well. So we can't take care of every organization to the maximum that they need, but we can be a part of building that community along with them. So I think the fundraising has changed, number one. Number two is, I think that there is, you know, the old United Jewish Appeal, UJA, their motto was, we are one. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder for the Jewish community today to say we are one. There's various views about Israel. There's various views about Jewish life, various views about reform, conservative, orthodox, reconstructionist, et cetera. We're all looking at our Jewish lives through multiple lenses. I think when my grandparents grew up, you were involved in the Jewish community. This is what you did, especially in smaller Jewish communities. Okay, so I grew up in Orlando. Orlando and Portland are very similar in its size, scale, et cetera. In those communities, you belonged and did everything. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a Jewish community. When you live in a place like New York, or you live in a place like Philadelphia or Los Angeles, you basically can walk out your front door and feel like the world around you is Jewish. It doesn't exist here in Portland. Didn't exist in Orlando when I grew up. So I think we've learned how to take a community-minded nature when we're actually a community of micro-communities. And so I see the Federation as trying to bring the overlay of a giant, large, singular Jewish community with the opportunity for people to express their Judaism and their Jewish lives however they wish. But we just want to be a part of that.
Yeah. Let me make sure I got this right. The Federation seeks to position itself as like the common thread in Jewish experience for folks, whatever their experience in Judaism may be.
That was beautifully said. And I'll add this. I see the Federation as the guardian and trustee of the overall Jewish community. We care about every aspect of the Jewish community. If you run a school, you care mostly about your school. If you run a camp, you care mostly about the camp. If you're running a family service agency, you care about your clients. We care about everything in Jewish life, fighting anti-Semitism, security, having a community mikvah, raising money to support Israel. Whatever it may be, we see our role as to support the community as best we can.
So before we get into talking specifically about your time here in Portland, you've worked in, as you mentioned, Baltimore, Atlanta, Philadelphia. What's something, at least while you were living in those places, what was something in those Jewish communities, in those locations, that made them each distinctive?
So I hope this comes out right to the audience here in Portland or anybody else listening. Okay. Baltimore was a tremendous Jewish community. It has everything you could ever want. It was very kind of ghettoized in where the Jewish community lived. That's kind of changed over time. It just had, you just felt rich Jewish life just walking out your door and just feeling it everywhere. It just had the, it was just, you had to live it to understand it. Mm-hmm.
And when you say ghettoized, like the Jewish, you, in the good sense, the Jewish community was physically, geographically close together.
We basically, you could take a 3-mile by 9-mile rectangle, and probably 85 to 90% of the Jewish community lived in that rectangle. Okay, synagogues, day schools, Jewish organizations, all up and down one main road. I mean, that's just how it was, how it was set up. But today it's very different. People have moved just like they've moved in other places like Portland. We live all over the place. Atlanta was interesting because Atlanta was all about newcomers. A third of the Jews in Atlanta when I lived there came from New York or New Jersey. The other two-thirds, the majority of them were not necessarily from Atlanta. They were from small towns of the southern states. So people moved from North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, or whatever, to come to Atlanta, because Atlanta is really the biggest city and the hub of the southeast. There you learned about engagement. How do you find and connect people who are living in a very large geographical dispersion to connect them to Jewish life, to let them find pathways to the Jewish community, et cetera, that matters to them. Now, Philadelphia is one of the oldest Jewish communities in America. It has a river that divides it, okay, the Schuylkill River. So I lived in the northern suburbs, but there was the other side of town, the main line. You had people who lived in the center city. It was like multiple communities that really didn't interact with each other. And I think that's where I kind of learned more about these geographic boundaries that people have created or found in Jewish life. We have an east side and a west side with the river. Do I cross the river or not? You know, if somebody lives in, you know, Happy Valley and West Lynn, are they going to come to Jewish institutions that are 20 miles away? So how do you create Jewish spaces where people will want to travel the distance and at the same time create avenues for them to have Jewish life closer to where they live? You know, Philadelphia was another place where you felt like the whole city was Jewish. 6 million people, 250,000 Jews, but you felt like the whole world was Jewish around you. You quickly learned that it's not all Jewish, but the Jewish community struggled in connecting people because of the geographic boundary mindsets that mm-hmm. people have.
And it was less about the physical boundaries and more about the mindset of those boundaries?
Yes, yes. I mean, look, you know, when I would go drive home from an event on the main line in Philadelphia, it would take me 45 minutes to an hour. It was a long drive because it's just small, tiny, windy roads through neighborhoods, et cetera. Portland, I think, is getting more and more dispersed as well. So it takes me 25 minutes to get to the JCC. Well, if I have to go to the east side, it's 45 minutes from my house. Is that a barrier for me? For some, it is, and for others, it's not. Our community study even pointed out how distance becomes a barrier mm-hmm. for people. I want us to figure out, learning what I understood in Baltimore, what makes a great Jewish community, to Atlanta with all these newcomers and engagement, to Philadelphia where you have these geographical barriers, whether true or not. How do we take those three things and plop it down here in Portland and find the best answers possible to support Jewish life?
Been at it for 14 years. How's it been going?
So, you know, they say your first 2 years you try to figure out and learn about the community. I'm still learning about the community. I think that there's so much newness to what's happening in Jewish life. When I interviewed here, I said to the committee that it's my goal that we're the test market for Jewish America. When Wendy's tries out a new product, they don't go to Los Angeles or New York. They go to Kansas City and they go to Columbus, Ohio to test out its smaller market. We're not too big and we're not too small. So we're like the right size to really give it a shot of trying new and different things. And we've tried some things. Some things have stuck, some things haven't stuck. But what I'm proud of in our work here at the Jewish Federation is that we're constantly trying new and different. I have too many colleagues around the country who there's this fear of failure. What if we try something and it doesn't work? I think people here embrace that. Not the failure part, but the opportunity to try it. But if it does fail, okay, so we tried it. I'd rather us be doing something mm-hmm. than just trying to live off our laurels of what we've done for the past 25 years. So as the community changes, we're changing. I think that we've brought lots of new ideas to the community. I think we've brought things that are very community-minded, a community mikveh, first federation in the country to own, operate, and build a community mikveh. Our community study, we're not the first community to do a community study, but I'm very proud that we found the resources to do a real demographic study to understand who we are and what our community looks like and how do we respond to that, which we are now doing by having 12 recommendations from that community study. I'm out raising money for something we're calling the Catalyst Fund. And it's my goal that we'll be able to implement these 12 new initiatives. And we'll see over the next 3 years which work, which don't work. But we're thinking, constantly thinking of new and different ways to engage people. Mm-hmm. I think that we're trying to do a better job on the East Side. We haven't been great about it. I think we have to do more. I think the East Side Jewish Commons, credit to their leadership for what they've created. But how do we engage more people on the East Side? Just as I think we have to engage people who don't live, you know, 3 miles from the JCC. People are everywhere. So the people in West Lynn, the people in Oregon City, the people in Gresham, we're open to welcoming them, participating with them, creating with them, and that's something that we want to figure out. I'll just add one last thing about Portland. You know, Portland's an interesting mishmash of people, my technical term, mishmash. Mm-hmm. It's multi-generational families, been here 3, 4, 5 generations, and then you had the group of people who moved here 30 years ago, and now we're seeing this influx of people who moved here in the past 10 years. They all have a very different perspective on Jewish life. If you grew up here, you knew everybody. I understand all the organizations, the history, the connections, et cetera. You moved here 30 years. You possibly moved here when you were, you know, in your 20s and 30s. You had your kids. You grew up with other families. And you found Jewish life together. And now you have these newcomers. So in the old, I make this comment all the time. In the old days, when you moved to a new city, a Jewish community, you would pick up the phone and call a synagogue or the JCC or the Federation and say, hey, I'm new here. Love to get connected to Jewish life. People don't make those phone calls in the same way. Now, we do get phone calls, we do get emails, et cetera. But a lot of people just go on social media, type into the computer, I'm moving to Portland, anybody know anything? And the next thing you know, you got 300 new friends you've never met. Two of those people may be Jewish, or none of them may be Jewish. And they're telling you where to live, what to do, how to do it, et cetera. So how do we find those people who aren't reaching out to us when they come to town? I don't believe they want to hide from Jewish life. I just think that it may not be the number one priority at that moment in their life. Mm-hmm. And hopefully at some point they'll say, we're seeking out the Jewish community. So we're trying to prepare for that as well.
And not hiding from Jewish life, it's just that the way people engage with Jewish life in a new community is different than it was 10, 20 years ago.
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so.
And it's interesting to hear the sort of stages in the Jewish community in Portland explained that way, because it, in my experience, that really mirrors the non-Jewish community in Portland, sort of the divides in demographic and how those divides have played out in different experiences that people have living in Portland.
Interesting.
So speaking of Portland, you mentioned that this was one of the cities that you were most impressed by when you were international president of BBYO. What was specifically the draw about Portland that made it so impressive to you, that left such an impression on you? And in addition to that, or maybe they're the same answer, what was the draw that made you want to come here to become president and CEO of the Federation?
So, look, when you grow up in Orlando, Florida, you don't see lush green trees. You don't really see rain. You have humidity. You have, you know, 100-degree days, you know, day in and day out. What I think I found here when I got here was I'd never seen anything that looked like this place. You know, I didn't see hills. I didn't see trees. It was just beautiful, okay? Same thing with Dublin, Ireland. I think the green just kind of wowed me. As for the attraction of the Jewish community, I think there's a couple of things. Number one is West Coast Judaism is what East Coast Judaism is going to be like in the next 5, 10, 15 years, if it isn't already.
Really?
Meaning in the sense of less engagement, less affiliation, which I'm not a big fan of. The word affiliation in my mind means I paid dues to become a member of some place. Doesn't necessarily recognize what people do Jewishly in their lives, but I didn't pay dues. You know, we have a, you know, a lower synagogue membership than most communities, low, you know, JCC membership. But that same pattern is moving across the country. Trends typically go from the east to the west. I think Jewish trends are going from the west to the east. So I wanted to be not on the cutting edge, but on the at least on the edge to be able to try to create new and different that might impact what's happening in Chicago, Baltimore, et cetera, as Jewish life changes in those communities as well. Number two is the opportunity to really explore and do things differently. Number one, I've never been a CEO before. Okay, that was a big opportunity. You know, I've worked with tremendous bosses, but I'm not the boss. And when you're not the boss, you can't make the change that you might want to see in the work that you're doing. So here I've had the opportunity to work with my volunteer leadership to really make changes that I think can enhance and enrich the Jewish community. So that was a big opportunity for me. And I always thought I was going to be a director of a large city federation. And when I go to conferences today, I sit there and say to myself, how lucky I am I'm not in their jobs. Because their jobs are like, it's like an iceberg melting. Okay, it's very slow. Now, forget climate change and you know how fast they're melting it. But change is much slower in a big community because you can't just wake up and say, you know, I've got an idea, let's do it. It's 9 months of task forces, 3 months of board discussion. Where's the money going to come from, et cetera? Here, I've had the ability with my lay leadership to literally make decisions overnight that we can implement the next day. So, you know, a simple example, and maybe not a popular one, was, you know, when I moved here, the Jewish Review was losing a lot of money, $200,000 a year. And we couldn't afford to keep doing that. So we made the decision to shut down the Jewish Review. Now, people were very angry about it. I understand. The paper had been around for 52 years. I got it. But it was something that wasn't fiscally responsible on our part. We were looking at a new magazine as a new way to communicate. The magazine did its part for a bunch of years. And then we recognize as the newspaper industry changed, people are reading their news online, that we could create an online newspaper. We were able to do that very, very quickly. In other communities, it would take years to make something like that happen. When we built the community mikveh, weird story, I went to the old community mikveh. It needed tremendous repairs. I said, gee, one day we'll build a new mikveh. The people who were the keepers of the mikveh who were living there, they decided to go live with their family down in California. And the next thing I know, we're going to be building a brand new mikveh. Now, this wasn't a three-year process. It was actually a very quick process with people getting their input, and then we made it happen. So I like the ability in a smaller community to make quick decisions and implement them really fast versus the long-term approach of, Let's study it.
We're a size of community that has room for dynamic leadership.
Yes, and not just dynamic leadership, but people who are willing to experiment and try and say, this sounds like we're doing what's best for the community at this moment in time. Let's make it happen. And that's what I'm really key on.
And I am personally very grateful that that has happened in terms of restarting the Jewish Review. In those 14 years, we've touched on this a little bit more, but I guess this is an opportunity to elaborate. How have you seen Jewish life in Portland evolve in those 14 years? Obviously, we've had movements in population away from the sort of traditional center, what's often thought of as the center of Jewish life in Southwest Portland, over to the east side, to the west side suburbs. What else has changed in terms of how Jews live and experience their Judaism here in Portland?
So, Rockne, that's a great question. Here's what I would say. The positive change is the additions that have been made to Jewish life here in Portland. We have historical synagogues. They continue to do great work. They continue to engage many families in the community. And we have some newer synagogues in town. We have every, use the word, flavor of Judaism you can find, and there's a synagogue that's right for you. We have a tremendous Jewish community center, family service agency. We have camps, you know, BB360 and Camp Solomon Schechter. We have our day schools in town. So all of that, those things that have been around for a very long time continue to do incredible work for our Jewish community. What's nice to see is that there's even more add-ons to what's going on in Jewish life. So the East Side Jewish Commons, places like Tisch PDX, organizations that are trying to expand their horizons to find avenues or to open avenues for Jews in our community to find their place. So, you know, when Nike had the motto, you know, just do it, my goal is how do we create more engagement vehicles for Jews, however they want to engage? It's not for me to tell you how to live your Jewish life. It's for us to find ways to involve you in a Jewish community that meets you on your own terms. And some people have their terms drawn in the sand of this is who we are and how we do it. Mm-hmm. And there's other organizations that I think continue to think differently about what Jewish life means to somebody today. So, you know, are you a cultural Jew? Are you a historical Jew? Are you a religious Jew? We have something for everybody. And I'm just hopeful that the Federation can continue to encourage more Jewish involvement, whatever that may mean, because that's just going to benefit us for the long term.
Mm-hmm. And when we look at our community study from last year that points out how significant of a population in our community is not synagogue members, hasn't been synagogue members, which compares to trends, you know, Oregon being one of the most unchurched, quote-unquote, states in the country, the availability of programs and organizations and opportunities for engagement for Jews outside of synagogue life that we have in Portland that you mentioned, is that something that you see mirrored in other locations, bigger picture?
Well, I think it's happening everywhere. And, you know, I was criticized very early on when I moved here that I had made a comment that there's other ways to be Jewish than just belonging to a synagogue. Okay. And several rabbi colleagues were very upset by that comment. What we see is that basically in our community, 80% of people do not belong to a synagogue. Now, it's very likely that of that 80%, 90% of them belong to a synagogue. So the question is, it's just like people who don't donate to the Federation or who donated at one point and stopped donating. What is it that we're not doing that's not engaging the people in the way that they want to be engaged? And I think everybody's looking for those magic bullets, the wrong word, for the magic sauce, the secret sauce of how to do that. And what I'm grateful for is that every Jewish organization in town is thinking differently. And I think there's a lot of models out there that open our eyes to new ways to do things. You know, Chabads, you know, perhaps the greatest engagement vehicle in Jewish life around the world. Okay, there's a Chabad center basically everywhere. And we have, you know, plenty of them here in the metro area. I think that, you know, they're on a, you know, one-to-one kind of relationship building business. Other organizations are come in my door and, you know, pay dues and we'll greet you and we'll give you everything that you could imagine that's going to, you know, fulfill you. We have organizations that want to provide vital services, Jewish educational services. They might do informal education through camping, whatever it may be. Our community is really blessed with people who understand the different nature of Oregon's Jewish life and Southwest Washington. Different than this person in Chicago or LA where they just feel like, of course, everybody's Jewish and everybody's going to do my Jewish and they're going to find us. Here, we're figuring out how to get to people where they are. And I think we're going to be more successful based on the data from the community study help guiding us along that path.
I'm looking forward to it. So kind of looking into the future, maybe you've been in Jewish Federation systems working in Jewish life for 30 years. Let's look into the next 30 years. What are the challenges that you see confronting the broader American Jewish community, not just in Portland, but Jewish life in America? What are the challenges that you see moving forward, and how can the community address them proactively, if that's possible?
So as of this recording on May 28th, sadly, anti-Semitism is huge major news across the board.
I doubt that will change by the time we release this podcast.
You know, okay, that's sadly true. When I started in this field 30 years ago, I never thought anti-Semitism would be one of the main issues of the day that we would be addressing. I never have really talked about anti-Semitism or about Jewish security and those kind of things because I don't want people to live a Jewish life of fear. I want people to live a Jewish life of pride and joy and fulfillment. And right now, it's really hard what's going on, whether it's on campuses, in the streets. And, you know, people can have different views on what's going on in Israel, okay? And I think that's one of the other challenges that we're going to be facing is the connections and the closeness and the relationship Jews in America have with Israel. And, you know, there's plenty of studies that say younger Jews as well as, you know, progressive Jews are saying, you know, I'm upset at Israel and I don't like what's going on in Israel, or they may be anti-Zionists for all I know. And the flip side, there's other people who are, you know, standing tall and standing strong side by side with Israel. That Israel dynamic is going to just continue to ebb and flow and change over time. So I think anti-Semitism and Israel are two key issues on a broader North American level. The other thing that I think is just Jewish philanthropy. So in total, we're actually raising less Jewish philanthropy than we were 20 years ago based on inflation, et cetera. Fewer people are contributing to Jewish causes than they did 20 years ago. How do we reverse that? So in the old days, whatever that means, you know, being Jewish was like, you know, number one, number two, or number three in your identity of who you were. And supporting Jewish communal life was just something you did, whether it was an obligation, whether it was a Jewish tax, as some people said, or, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do, whatever it might have been. Today, being Jewish might be number 63 on a list of, you know, 70 descriptors of who I am. And giving away to Jewish charities, well, why give to a Jewish charity? I can give to, you know, the Cancer Center, this, and this, because I'm expressing my Jewish values, okay? I think that that's something we will see eventually a collapsing of Jewish organizations, not in a negative sense, but in a merger kind of way to reduce duplication of services, figure out what services are most needed in Jewish life versus other places. I think that's where we're kind of headed. I think, you know, there's been plenty of synagogue mergers that have taken place. I think there's been consolidation in Jewish communities that have taken place. We've got to think differently because in most cases, our older generation are the largest donors. And when they're no longer here, will their children or grandchildren or others replace those large donor gifts? And I think that's something we just don't know yet. But in those communities where this has happened, what they've seen is a loss in those philanthropic contributions. And we need more people contributing Jewishly, and we need people to raise their gift level to support the costs of what it costs to run a Jewish community. Yeah.
So in terms of, obviously, if we had the answer to how to increase Jewish philanthropy, we'd just go out and do it. We wouldn't be having the conversation about it. But in terms of managing changing relationships with Israel, how does the Jewish community approach that? Is there a way for the Jewish community to approach that that's both supportive of the Jewish state, but understanding and accepting of those who maybe have their qualms about it or its place in the global community and its actions on its own soil?
Oh, now we're getting to Israel politics. So
not too deep.
Yeah, no. Look, I think that everybody sees their view of Israel as if they're the center. Okay, so you're either right of me or left of me. And so I think that we struggle with, is it Israeli government? Is it Israel itself? Is it how the Israeli government may talk to or treat the United States or vice versa? How do they deal with the Palestinian situation? Are they on a path for a two-state solution for peace, normalization with Saudi Arabia? Everybody's going to have their view. And October 7th just brought it out that much more. And as the war continues on, it gets to be people get more and more dug in into their views. I try to be as open-minded as possible. I find that people are stuck in their views more than ever. I want to be as open to hearing alternative views. And I think what happens is when somebody disagrees with those alternative views, then immediately it's like you're just at this, you know, this traffic jam and you can't get any further versus trying to have more and more dialogue about why you feel that way, why you think that way. This war, as much as it's about October 7th and about facts of people can say, well, what happened in 67, you know, 1948, this war is really about feelings and how you feel about it. And I'm not here to tell somebody how they feel. All I can do is share how I feel or what the feelings of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland are. And when you get into feelings, it becomes much more difficult to have the conversations than when it's about facts and figures.
I will pause here to note that's probably the smartest thing I've heard said about this war in the 7 months it's been going on, so thank you.
All right, well, I appreciate that. All right.
So if you could offer one piece of advice to the next generation of Jewish community leadership here in North America, what would it be?
Explore. Find your place. It's there. Or if it's not there, help create it. Push, nudge, encourage, whatever it may be. You can't be on the sidelines and say, there's nothing there for me. You got to get involved. You got to get engaged. I think one of the biggest changes in my 30 years of Jewish communal life is we're seeing more professionalism and the professionalization of Jewish organizations, as well as other nonprofits, versus the true volunteer-led organizations that I started with 30 years ago. I want to see people roll up their sleeves and say, yeah, I'm willing to be on a board, sit on a committee, be out, you know, two nights a month to really dig deep into an organization versus kind of say, yeah, I don't have the time, not so interested, and then you don't do anything to help make anything better. I want people to really get in the game, and I'd love to see more of that.
So you are known as somebody who obviously works very hard, is very committed to Jewish life. You are responsive by email and text in a way that frankly mesmerizes me. What is it that you get excited about outside of building Jewish community here in Portland?
So I'm a TV junkie. So every new show, I'm on it. It's on my calendar weeks or months in advance, ready to go. I continue to be a historian of professional wrestling, very knowledgeable about the history of professional wrestling. I'm not sure I should admit that. My wife tells me I should never admit that, but I will.
This is a safe space.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, as it goes out to the broadcast. I'm also love to work out. When I was in high school, I was a two-time state champion in weightlifting. And then I went to college and I was a three-time champion in weightlifting when I was in college. And then, you know, I lifted, you know, sporadically. But now, since the pandemic, I've gotten far more engaged in it and much more into it. So I enjoy that. But I'm, you know what I love the most? Just sitting at home with my wife. Now, she probably doesn't love that the most, but I enjoy just spending time with her the most. And I find that the most meaningful thing. You know, look, I live and breathe this stuff. So I love when people want to engage, whether it's a text, an email, a phone call, a meeting, or whatever. I thrive on that engagement. At the same time, I'm really good about turning, not turning it off, but having other avenues to enjoy my life besides work, 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 work. My wife would tell you I'm a workaholic. I would tell you, like, no, just because I answer emails at night doesn't mean I'm a workaholic. I do it in between whatever. So I do find my private space. I do have my private time. Big reader of nonfiction books, but that's who I am.
In the course of your career in Jewish work, and this will be a funny way to phrase this question, but in the course of your 30 years that you've worked in the Jewish community, who is the most underrated professional wrestler and why?
Oh, most underrated. Well, I can tell you who the greatest wrestler of ever, who was Abdullah the Butcher. Most people here wouldn't know him, but he's my all-time favorite. That's mm-hmm. a whole different story. Most underrated wrestler.
And if Abdullah the Butcher is unknown, does that mean maybe he is?
Oh, he underrated? Was world. No, he was world famous, but I'm not sure Oregon. I don't think he came to Oregon so much. That would, like, if I mentioned Playboy Buddy Rose here, people here would know who Playboy Buddy Rose was. Most underrated wrestler. Well, I'll tell you a story. When I went to college at Emory in Atlanta, I interned at World Championship Wrestling, which was then owned by Ted Turner. And I used to go to the TV tapings at the Center Stage Theater. So I was basically on TV for 2.5 years, every week watching, being at the wrestling matches. And Stone Cold Steve Austin of WWE fame, I knew him when he was Stunning Steve Austin when he first started. And I had always told my friends that he will be the greatest wrestler ever. And unfortunately, his career got cut short, but he is definitely one of the greatest wrestlers ever. So there's a quick little story for you. I don't know who the most underrated wrestler is. I'll tell you, my favorite Jewish wrestler was Barry Horowitz. Barry Horowitz was known as a jobber. They're the guys who always lose on TV. Mm-hmm. But he had this famous gimmick where he would wear a vest, and on the back of his left shoulder of his vest would be like a handprint. And he would constantly, when they would announce his name, he would pat himself on the back where the handprint was. So I always thought that was very clever. So that was Barry Horowitz.
That's a good bit.
So there you go.
All right. So you had mentioned at the beginning of our recording that you had worked in your dad's deli.
Yes.
What's the secret to a good corned beef sandwich?
Really, really hot. That's the key. And lots of Russian dressing. You know, I will tell you, working at my dad's deli, I learned 3 unbelievable life lessons. Okay. Number one is the customer is always right, whether you think so or not. Okay, if the customer says, my corned beef's not hot enough and it's steaming up the wazoo, it's not hot enough, so go make it hotter. So it didn't matter. Number two is all conflicts can be resolved with a smile. If you smile at people, it just puts everybody at ease. Okay. And the third thing I learned, which is a skill that is long gone, it doesn't exist anymore, is how to properly count change back to people. So, you know, let's say the bill was $14.65 and the person gave you a 20, you were taught to give 5 and 45 cents makes 20, okay? Today, the kid rings it up on the thing if anybody pays cash anymore, but they ring it up and it'll immediately tell you, oh, I owe you $3.70, right? It's very different, but I learned how to count cash, how to count the change back to people. And I always thought that was a great lesson.
So what is, in that same vein, I guess, what is your favorite part about being Jewish?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. I'm a peoplehood Jew. Okay, so I don't consider myself religious, although we do Shabbat, and although we do the holidays, and although I sleep in my sukkah every year if I can, if it's not raining, you know. But to me, it's this idea of we're a collective group, however defined, of people who are, there's a connection that we have. Avram Infeld, a famous Israeli, always says that we have a collective memory. That's who we are. We're about a collective memory. This may sound odd, but like I think the coolest thing in the world is to go to a bris when a baby boy's eight days old and gets circumcised. Like, I'm like in the front row saying, like, this is part of who we are as a people. In fact, when my son was circumcised, I wanted to do the final cut. And the moel was like, no problem. And my wife's like, no way. And I was like, like, I thought what a mitzvah it would have been for me able to do that. But I that kind of going to a bris, going to a bar bat mitzvah, watching somebody stomp on the glass at a Jewish wedding while they're under the chuppah, there's something about that Jewish people nature. We all understand what it is that I love so much. And I thrive on that. That's what I thrive on.
Mark Blattner, thank you for joining us on the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you, Rodney.
That's all for this episode of the Jewish Review Podcast. Mazel tov to Mark Blattner for 30 years in Jewish federations, and thank you for your dedication to Jewish community and for taking the time to come on the show. You can read more about Mark's career thus far in today's Jewish Review online at jewishportland.org/Jewish Review. If you liked this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice to help others find our show. Click subscribe to get our latest episode every 2 weeks, and tell a friend. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please reach out by email to editor@jewishportland.org. The Jewish Review Podcast is a production of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Our associate editor is Karon Blau-Rothstein. Special thanks to Daniel Berger. Our theme music is by Isaac Jolt. I'm Rockney Roll. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, all the best.